It's that time again on a Friday when AM Live presents another update from the coalface with Martin Creamer, publishing editor of Engineering News and Mining Weekly. A very good morning to you, Martin.
And to you, Kalani.
Thank you very much. Well, South Africa's once proud ferrochrome industry is on its knees, Martin, struck down by China.
That was the news. Now, in Johannesburg, we've just in the throes of a global ferrochrome conference in Johannesburg, and the news coming out of that was that South African ferrochrome profitability is down to zero or below. And on top now of the world are China. We were the biggest producers in the past. You know, this is an industry that has 200,000 jobs. It contributes 42 billion to the GDP. The forex that it puts into our economy is comparable with what gold puts in, but it's seriously on the decline, and knocking it down are the electricity issues, and also the whole infrastructure that's been developed is now lying idle. So we are helping the Chinese. The Chinese don't have the chrome ore of their own. 50% of that ore now comes from South Africa. This flies directly in the face of our beneficiation policy. This was an example of beneficiation. You add sixfold value to your normal chrome and you export ferrochrome. But it's an industry that people are saying the situation is worse now for ferrochrome than when it was during the global meltdown. Now, present were representatives from South Africa's Department of Mineral Resources, and they are saying they are now 2 weeks into rescue talks. Unfortunately, you know, the Indians used to be the biggest suppliers of this chrome to China. They stopped in 2006. They said, we're going to impose taxes on the export of this. What has been asked for by the industry is just in the interim, please just impose an export tax of $100 a ton. That still hasn't happened. So the talks now are progressing. Hopefully something will come out of this. You know, the government's saying they want to look at it holistically and make sure that South Africa Incorporated wins. We hope so, because there's very expensive infrastructure that has been built for about 13 billion rand, much of it lying idle. This is good environmentally. It doesn't spew carbon dioxide into the air. The furnaces that the Chinese have does just that. They have smaller furnaces. So even environmentally, there's an argument for South Africa retaining this market. Hopefully, they'll put their heads together and do something. There's a lot of activity going on, calling for restructure of the industry in Johannesburg. I don't see that happening, but still, I think there will be some sort of rescue from government.
There has to be. There has to be. I mean, there are jobs here. There are all sorts of benefits that we should accrue as a country. Anyway, should migrant mine workers be flown home during their off periods? Now, that's the suggestion from new thinkers in the mining sector, and a very interesting suggestion here, Martin.
You know, Marikana has got people thinking out of the box. You know, this situation of the 100-year-old culture still being developed in labor here is just not on anymore. And people are saying, you know, mine workers, migrants, having to live dual lives, you know, one around the mine, they never seem to get home for long periods of time, and then also going back every now and again to their home. That should be looked at, because in other countries, you know, find there are different models. You know, people have flown thousands of miles to get back to their families every 10 to 15 days. I mean, we look at Argentina, where they'll fly people 2,500 kilometers to Buenos Aires, you know, from Patagonia area. So the suggestion now is let's look at the economic feasibility of this versus the living out allowance, which has caused such a lot of problems. I mean, here you've got the mine saying they don't contribute to the squatter camps around the area. But if you give a living out allowance, how do you know? Because people are going to just develop their own homes because their families are in distant areas, maybe in the Eastern Cape or in Lesotho or in Mozambique. And they think, well, let me get the cash. I don't mind how I live here, even though I may be suffering from TB, which is going to make it worse. And, you know, my diet is not going to be good. So they're saying, let's relook at that and see whether they can't have mass transport arrangements, you know, getting people back to their families and greater frequency of, you know, every 10 to 15 days. So one of the protagonists now of this is AngloGold Ashanti's newly appointed social and sustainable development executive David Noko, who's also very keen on trying to bolt on an education type school onto mines. You know, he's saying like we had academic hospitals where people would go in there and, you know, do research and advance themselves. Can't we have bolt-on education in mining activities and maybe even academic mines to try and uplift this whole situation of employing minimally educated people? This has probably been the biggest downfall of the mining industry, you know, employing minimally educated people and now expecting high productivity. Well, by, you know, appointing these minimally educated people, you're probably building in lack of productivity into the system. And, you know, that has to be rethought. And a lot of comment coming up now, you know, I mean, even from Patrice Motsepe this week saying, you know, you've probably got to draw the line with labor demands because a lot of these labor demands are becoming unreasonable. And, of course, Patrice Motsepe from African Rainbow Minerals saying, you know, there are now times when you've got to look your labor in the eye and say, we cannot pay you what you want because it's totally unreasonable. Mm. And so with the movement in of less mature unions and sometimes not unions at all, these demands don't seem to be based on any rationality. And the line now is starting to be drawn and new thinking coming into the industry to take us out of that mold that we were in that probably is an old 100-year-old culture.
Very interesting. Martin, just very quickly, South Africa needs more oil refining capacity. That's according to the South African Petroleum Association.
Yeah, this is also a very critical thing. You know, SAPIA says that we need this extra capacity. We note that some of our refineries are 50 years old, aging, and not much is being done to upgrade them. There is the new legislation coming in, Fuels 2 by 2017, and around all that activity, people are saying, what are we going to do to ensure, you know, to have a security of supply of fuels? And they're saying, no, we need more capacity and we need to talk to government.
Martin Creamer, publishing editor of Engineering News and Mining Weekly. He'll be back at the coal face at the same time next Friday. Martin, as always, thank you.
Thank you, Kalani.